I won't need that to know that again, you know. Yeah. Which is daft, really, because I maybe will.
Do you do? Facts and figures. Mm. Like we were talking about dementia and all these other people remembering things, but it's all to do with what relevance it has, isn't it?
Yes, so. Indeed.
Right, you guys are on. We're on now.
Oh, right.
So there you are, that's it. Nothing here, just let's chat. I was talking about, you know, we were just talking about bands or whatever it is. Yeah. Bands always come up for obvious reasons. But just say who you are, just like...
Right, okay, well, I'm Rosie Aston, and I've come here today to talk about Helen's Trust, which is a small local charity that helped me very much. I was a beneficiary, well, my family was a beneficiary of the Trust 4 years ago. I went on to volunteer with them and now work for them part-time and also still volunteer. So it's my job to go out in the community and let people know what the charity's about, and the charity's about helping people to stay at home in the final stages of their life. So generally we have a set of criteria, and it's that you should be in the last 6 months of life, and then we'll just do whatever's necessary to make it easier to stay at home, really, with sitting services, aids, anything really. We've done all sorts. I was talking at the talk I've just given, I was talking about an alarm that they fitted for me when I was caring for somebody. And it's just a great small charity, so I just go out and about talking about it.
So there's a good one. Where are we at? Where are we? who's here? Fiona's husband.
Hello, my name's Fiona Edwards, and I'm, luckily, met
Rosie,
who, because I'm actually a nurse, well, my background really, I'm wanting to be nursing, but I still do some nursing. But my main sort of focus is on helping people help themselves. And one of the things that I like doing is helping people with their health and their nutrition and stuff like that. And I was a yoga teacher, I'm still a yoga teacher. But
I must get your details of
and
that.
Also,
nice yoga class.
Looking at various ways of keeping health, keeping fit. And then along the way, I met somebody who helped me to help myself with my bills, which was a big worry to myself. And I always think that anxiety, if you can lessen somebody's lessen anxiety, then you're actually helping them. And then the other thing was with the utility warehouse business, you can then, which is what I do now, is to gain a little bit more money monthly to do other things that you really want to do. So you can either, lessen your hours or that kind of thing, and then, you know, concentrate on the things that you really want to do
in
life.
Anxiety is such a huge thing, isn't it?
Anxiety is the biggest thing that I've come across, and I've, also
battled
against it
so
myself.
Prevalent? Yeah, well,
I think
had
everyone
huge
has
bouts of anxiety.
Perhaps,
and it doesn't take, have to be anything specific either,
no,
does it?
No.
A tiny thing can set anxiety off.
Exactly, yes. So your job and your role now, you will be relieving a lot of people's anxieties.
Well, yeah, there is a bigger picture, and you do think of that, but that doesn't help sometimes when you wake up early hours. Who was I talking about that? About waking up really early in the mornings. I was just talking to somebody else, and they were saying, well, it's natural to wake up at half four when it gets starting to get light.
Yes, absolutely.
And
I agree.
I keep my window open
and I like being
waking up
naturally.
Yeah, I kind of have the curtains open now. Yeah. And you do naturally wake up.
Yes.
But then I don't do anything productive with it, really. I sit there and I think, oh, I'll watch something on Netflix now for an hour and then get up. And really, it's good to be productive first thing,
it
isn't
is,
it?
Actually.
Get everything done.
Yeah, it is.
Imagine how
it's
productive
really
I could be,
Even if it's making your own little smoothie before later or something like that, or just little bits that you can
do. You find out it's interesting, isn't it, how people do different things. You see these I'm going to say it, we're in Carver at the moment on a Friday morning, a very wet Friday morning. The whole point of this kind of these conversations is just putting people together. None of us have met each other before.
No.
This connection, because my mother was terminally ill last year, and Helen's Trust was mentioned to me and my family, and we said, yes, that's one thing we need to do. I don't know whether one of us actually rang you or not. I'm not sure yet, because it was such a blur.
It's all such a blur. There's so many people
and
involved, like I was saying.
It was just something that my mother did want to actually passed away at home, but she then went to Ashgate Hospice and she passed away in Ashgate Hospice. Mm. But she agreed to that.
Well, it's not right for everybody because sometimes you need a certain amount of treatment that you can't get at home, so it's not always practical.
It was when it snowed horrendously, it wasn't practical for her to be at home. The district nurses couldn't get out, or they couldn't promise to get out. They did get out, bless them, as they do, but not necessarily. They were worried about the right timing, so she went in to the hospice for that period of time as well, just to settle her down. But anyway, she never came out.
Yeah, and we are lucky, and I should say, like, Helen's Trust covers North Derbyshire and the High Peak.
I'm very interested in it. It's very good. Very good.
You don't do Sheffield.
No.
Is that because it's competition there?
No, I don't think I don't think charities like this exist everywhere. Actually,
they don't.
No,
they don't,
I've looked out. Yeah,
and I know that Helen's Trust would be something that really we should be giving to,
and maybe more
a Helen's Trust version should be given to everybody. But then again, I think the political issues surrounding this is that, you know, we need to have the politicians to provide this for, you know, we need a service that is provided by the, you know, the taxpayer,
what, possibly part of the NHS type
part of
thing.
The, part of it package, or these package things are just
I don't know if your parents are still alive, but anyway, mine are, and it's just, it's a, has it just become more relevant recently? I mean, I don't know. I just seem to be talking this
death all the time. So cheery.
Yeah. The thing is,
why not make it fun?
It has got to be fun, and why shouldn't, you know, you have this to look forward to, because everyone's going to die.
I kind of hate the concept of death, actually.
I'm quite happy with the concept of the fact that I want to plan my own little end if I can. It's not always possible.
And all it means is having that conversation, isn't it? So people know what you want. Yeah. Like, we had a long time, because Stuart, my husband, was kind of ill for a long time, but kind of well with it. He was kind of living with kind of cancer for years and years. And so he was kind of quite well. And we discussed it a lot of time, but it's quite abstract when you discuss it.
Yes,
and we did talk it in quite entertaining way, but the reality, the nitty-gritty of it when you're actually in it, is entirely different.
That's right, because you're in a bubble then.
Yeah.
And that is a very different thing, and you can bring all sorts of things into it, like spirituality, which I would do, but, you know, there's a vast range of...
Do you think people get more spiritual?
Yeah, I do think they do, yeah. Do you think so?
Well, my husband didn't, no. Very kind of, like, pragmatic about it all the way along, and just
depends on your beliefs at the time, doesn't it?
And kind of had a different kind of belief system, I think. So, no, he didn't. But I believe, I was talking to somebody else in there that was saying that the exact opposite that somebody had. I suppose it's all very individual, isn't it?
Yeah, some people just get it at that end bit, even if they might have been pragmatic.
Yeah, it's relevant to me. I've one of our running friends died recently, but he's been ill, but in a relatively short period, a couple of years. I wanted to throw this one in because I was quite angry, in a way, by other people's reactions, not my reaction. We discussed it individually between ourselves. But the format really irritates me.
It's of,
you know, well, the kind of the formality of the crematorium.
Yeah.
You get a celebrant, you know, comes along, and you go, well, actually, they don't really know them. Mm. They're talking, all that sort of stuff. And so we know you had wakes and all this stuff, and I was very insistent that I wasn't going to carry the coffin.
Yeah.
But equally, I wanted to sort of get over the real person.
Mm.
And that's the bit that was interesting when we were, you know, because that's what not come across. You know, he's always a great guy, or she's a great woman, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it doesn't say anything about him at all.
Well, no. And to be fair, because we used to talk about kind of death and what the funeral would be like. And she used to say, well, do what you think's right, because really, I'm not, you know, this is about you and how you feel. But we weren't religious. He didn't kind of, and he didn't, you know, he didn't want any kind of religion involved. So we did have a woodland. There are a few woodland sites. There's one in Hope. So we had a woodland burial there.
That's a great one, isn't it? Hope Cemetery.
Yeah. And I didn't go the whole route. You know, I didn't book cars or anything like that. I did find an undertaker who was very sympathetic, because I said, you know, there's certain things I want and I don't want to discuss other things, let's just do it really simply.
Yeah.
And I did have a celebrant there, but only because I'd written what I wanted to say, but I didn't think I'd be able to say it. So I just gave her.
Right.
She came to the house and she did actually write something, and I said, it doesn't sound like us. So yeah. I rewrote it for her and she just read it.
Yeah.
And that was great.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was very, very simple and, you know, kind of as eco as it could be, I think, really.
Yeah.
And then everybody just had a drink, which I'm sure that's what he'd have wanted.
Exactly. Sounds good to me. Sounds like,
well,
a good
the hope, the, yeah, the Hope Cemetery, I ran past it on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, it's no hope.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just all the places you would call hope.
Is I know.
Not it. But that, the wooden bit is taken over, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, it's a huge part of the cemetery.
Yeah, it is, it is. And you can't, you know, you can't do anything, because my daughter, she wanted to, like, plant plants, and you can't even do that. I think she scattered a few seeds. It has to all be very natural. They don't even have like little plaques
that
there. There's somewhere else
way,
that you can put a plaque.
Oh, can you?
Yeah.
That works.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
But the odd thing is, when we bought the plot, the guy said, do you want a plot there? Because it's getting really popular. Do you want a plot there? And I was like, I don't want to think about this now. I don't want to do it. But I was like, my daughter was there. And I said, what do you think? You know, I said, because the reality is, this is how you're going to deal with it.
Yeah,
so what do you think? And she said, well, it'd make it far easier if you're together there.
Exactly.
So I bought the plot. But I tell you, it makes it very odd when I go, because I know whereabouts it is. And I know that there's a plot for me.
I think that's quite a nice thing to do.
It does make me kind of smile, though, every time
nice
we go.
To do. I think that's
so
nice
that's
to
sorted and kind of.
It's a great selling point, isn't it?
Yeah.
You just catch you, right, I'm talking about catching you at the right moment.
And I did, that's right. Well, he only said, he also said, and if you buy at this point, if you buy two, you get like the second one half price. There was a deal on it. It was cheaper, So that's all payable. And I thought, and if they run out of space, it's such a beautiful spot as well. At some point, if I'm on my uppers, I can sell that plot to somebody.
Well, this is bringing a whole new business
it
sense.
It is, isn't it? I know, to the conversation.
There is life
it was
after
like,
death.
Help yourself. But, you know.
I think you have to have a bit of sense
but
of humour about
it. But it is kind of, it is being humorous and about being lighthearted about life. And then the anxieties are relieved. And it's like talking about it then relieves your anxieties about a very sensitive subject.
Yes, it is.
Like you're talking about. And like, I mean, I'm, you know, talking about it all the time when I'm in my job as a nurse, as a health professional, I'm hoping that I'm getting away from that. I mean, as a health professional in my other job, which is trying to prevent illnesses, which is going to the yoga and the, you know, looking after yourself and all that kind of stuff, to be able to live life whilst you're here. And yeah, if you want to plan for that, you know, end bit, then why shouldn't we? You know, it's quite a good idea. But also, the, you know, the fact that you're fundraising so that people can get a bit of help in those latter days, however long it is.
It makes a huge difference.
And
I was lucky, I'd got kind of a big kind of supportive family that were all helping as well. But, you know, I imagine for a lot of people, they don't have
Everybody gets exhausted. I've got two sisters and a brother, and we all got exhausted within a matter of 2 or 3 weeks. You know, and I'd already been exhausted. I'd gone to like, right, I'm going away for a bit, and then everyone else can come in. And it was that kind of situation for us. And then we all had to knit together in the latter things, because we're all over the place. One of my sisters lives in France, one lives in, my brother lives in Wales, and then it was just, you know, two of us just trying to juggle this thing and everything else, and your children and your grandchildren. And then everyone gets involved, and then it was just a massive loving sort of thing at the end. But it was would have been more ideal if we were at home. That's what Helen's Trust's about.
Yes, it is.
And we had heard of you then, that was just over a year ago, but you know, it wasn't quite right at that point. It wasn't quite time for it, but so it's really nice that I've met you today. Well, strange, isn't it, how people connect again,
and
like lots of people in there that are very interesting and
it's a nice group actually, wasn't it?
I've been coming for a while. In fact, when we set up the Fringe thing, which was all about communication, we put it in one place, the Memorial Hall, and got people just to sort of rock up with them what they did.
Yeah.
And if you know your neighbour, they didn't know what they did. You know, literally people finding out. But it's kind of outgrown that after 1 year, because all these connections and the blogging thing, which was this to go into, is brought up all manner of things which you've never been able to prescribe or just, you know, put a strategy together. Okay, I listen to all these things about what you should do for your business and, you know, why you should have them. But actually, most of our successful business has been done by pure accident. You know, just by doing these kind of conversations, all these sort of things happening.
We call it the magic in the business. I mean, like in the yoga fraternity, like a magic thing that happens. It's not just a magic, it is a spiritual, well, I believe it's a spiritual thing,
like,
but
it's
called the magic destined. Where it just it, you yeah. just do come together
okay.
for a reason, and you either, you know, you just come to you go to places and you think, why have I come here? And then it actually dawns on you why you've gone there for that in that particular day, and there isn't any real sort of what you can tangible
yeah,
thing that you can say
oh,
why you went there, but you did, and then you met such and such, and that's why you did that. But I mean, obviously, I came here to do business networking to help me with my practical side of things, but it isn't always about that. You then bump into somebody who then opens that other dimension, and I think it's the dimension that we don't tap into enough, really.
And
we aren't able to talk about it because people will go, what are you on about? But in actual fact, most of us have actually felt that or done that, but we don't actually know how to put that into words.
Well,
I think
you're I mean, if you think about how things happen, that's where it all kind of goes wrong, doesn't it?
Too much, yeah.
I like the idea that you think it's a magical thing. That's it just gets away from the sort of the larger entity saying directing you or something. Our kids are always moaning about us because we go anywhere.
Yeah.
And you always bump into somebody you know, and you go, how do you do that? Mm. Well, I don't know. But you do know, because you are what you are, and you wander around. I mean, just silly things that spark things off.
I think it's a connectivity thing, and I think that's what I find reassuring, that there's a lot of connectivity going on, and whether you actually seek it out yourself, or whether it happens for how and why. I don't, you know, we can't always...
You're not doing it consciously, are you?
No, it's not a conscious thing sometimes. It is sometimes, but it's a unconscious thing, and that's the lovely thing about it, and that's why I think it's a lovely... I don't know, just a positive thing, really, rather than getting into any sort of...
That's a nice philosophy, actually, isn't
it? Yeah.
I'm going to start thinking of it a bit more.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about, you're about Chatsworth, you were talking about.
Yeah.
I got this huge thing about Chatsworth. I mean, you probably might have gathered, if there's a big crowd, I'm elsewhere.
Mm.
You know, I'll start something off, but the idea if it gets too big or it gets massive, and Chatsworth just epitomises that to me.
Yes.
I mean, I shouldn't, I say to go and go to Chatsworth. It's about 20 years since I went there, but now it's just got this odd feeling that it just isn't what I think it should be.
Right.
And,
okay.
And when people turn up, I went to, for example, these open air concerts, and people were kind of doing what they were expected to do. You turn up with wicker basket.
I've been to those.
You listen to Mozart.
Yeah.
Well, why couldn't it be something different? Yeah. I know this thing. See, and an enormous amount of effort. I mean, this Fringe event, it was a huge amount of effort to get it together, and you like to see everything else, but financially it was kind of not quite, it didn't bring any money in, so you can't afford to do it again type thing. But the all the connections and the magic bit have paid for it time and time over.
Do you ever go to Buxton's Fringe as well? That's huge thing.
Yeah, this is why we were mucking around with the idea of Fringe, because the first thing I said, call it Fringe, that'll do great, that sounds like the type of thing gets people in communities. And then the first question I got was, what are you a fringe of? Because Edinburgh Fringe is now bigger than the Edinburgh Festival.
That's right.
It's the whole thing.
It's huge. It's incredibly expensive up there. I've done Edinburgh Fringe a couple of times. Most expensive holiday I've ever had going there. Yeah, because everything is just priced.
Well, they've gone, but you see, now it's become, there's a perfect example where. You half of the well-known names turn up to prototype there do their first public offering or something to try it out, and knock out all the people coming from the startups or the people wanting to start up in their businesses and so on, and they just can't do it. And these things will spawn all these other things. In a sense, the Fringe idea was exactly that. It's another thing of this.
Yeah.
But it's moved into more this networking, this community thing, creating these communities.
Yeah, it is lovely. It's a great atmosphere in Buxton when the Fringe is on. I love it, there.
Well, I used to live in Buxton.
Did you?
Yeah, I was the coldest winter on record.
Oh, it's always the coldest winter on record.
Yeah, whereabouts do you live?
Yeah, just just by, you know where the community school is?
I know where the swimming pool is.
Oh, well, not far from there. I live St. near John's the Pavilion Road. Gardens. Yeah,
right
around there.
Yeah. Well, I live in one of those old houses.
Yeah, I've got no a big heating. Old house. Yeah.
So you split it up into 12, that's right. I think. And we froze to death.
Yeah. Well, ours is a big old house, and we've got the top two floors of it. It's been kind of divided up, but it's huge. But when we moved there, the owners said, we haven't got heating, you don't need it. It's really warm. Now, they weren't telling us the truth.
No, they definitely were lying.
But that was like the first thing we did, we got heating put in, you know. But yeah, they breed them tough in Buxton, I tell you.
Well, it was 3 months below zero.
Yes, it's very cold at times. Though we haven't been snowed in as much as we thought we'd be. We were always worried about that, right, because you can get cut off. And I think it's only happened a couple of times. And I've been there 10 years now, so, right, you know.
Well, because what I like about it is that the train stops.
Yes. Yeah, you always get a seat on the train to Manchester. Yeah, because like we lived in Manchester a long time, so that's kind of our route to everything through to Manchester, and you always get a seat because you're the first
one. Of the reasons I came to Hope Valley was I lived in Nottinghamshire for years, and I've been married twice. But anyway, I moved to Chesterfield to be with my mum for the last 4 years because she was becoming more and more, and just lived there and commuted and done all sorts of things, mainly because I was the only one who hadn't got a husband then, or a partner, or a, you know, it was
so
more, I'd got the children,
yeah.
I'd still got Lucy, who's my youngest, but she was at school and things, and she'd gone to Manchester Uni this last year, and so my brother had sat down and said, you could do with being like halfway, and that was just one conversation. This is what I mean about this thing. That was only one conversation we had, that was a while ago. And then I was looking around for rentals because varying things had happened to me sort of financially over the years, particularly getting divorced and things.
Yeah, it's expensive like, business, I believe.
For the solicitors.
You can laugh about
things.
That one as well.
Yeah, I can go on about that. But
it's like a confessional in this
town,
isn't it?
No,
we're telling everything.
I'm not saying anything now.
But so that she was going to Manchester, and she got an unconditional acceptance for that. And I was just looking through Rightmove, and as I had been doing for about 2 years, actually, just to see what was on the market and what kind of, you know, what sort of place I could get that was nice, but not, you know, like a little hovel that I could not really function in, because I just couldn't, and I need to have a nice space to go back to and things like that. I think that's really important. And anyway, went on Rightmove this particular morning, and this came up in Middle of Hope Valley. It's on Laneside Farm. It's a farm, and it's next to the caravan, you know, the Laneside caravan thing.
Are we talking Castle
Hope?
Oh,
this
Hope.
And so it's on the left hand side,
it's
opposite the train station.
Yeah. It's always full.
It was absolutely, I'm in the house bit, but it's an apartment. And I just went, saw it, and went, yeah, this is it. This is my, you know, I'd looked at loads of other places, and I just knew that was it. Then, luckily, Lucy started in Manchester in the September. Her dad lives in Sheffield, so I'm halfway
perfect,
to them. So it's perfect for her to drop off at any time on the train. She's used the train loads of times.
There you go. It's all those threads.
It's
again.
All these little threads. So it's like,
how many times she got on the train in Sheffield and realised it was the fast one? It doesn't stop
know.
In Bamford.
I don't know.
I would hope.
Yeah. She probably doesn't go that. Well, she does. Yeah, she does go. Or she gets fetched in the car or something. But anyway, she's driving now, so she might get driving lesson and test done. So yeah, there's all little things like that. And then she's my last one, so it's the first time I've been on my own for.
Yeah, well, my daughter's off to
years.
She's off to Thailand in October for 6 months, and that'll be my first time living on my own for 35 years.
It's strange. It's nice in some respects. You think, I'll come home and I can put the telly on and put what I want on, and then after a while you think, oh my goodness, something's missing.
Yeah.
But that's why
we'll
get busier and busier.
Yeah.
I just get busier and busier. Meet lots of people. I like meeting lots of people.
Yeah.
Well, that's demonstrated. That's good.
I
literally have to go because these conversations are always 25 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Right,
that's how boring I am.
I'm going to switch up. Okay, great. Oh,
I can talk for 25 minutes.
I just got to get a.